Chapter 6, Day 257. Theda Old Town, 07:31. The service was over. There had been many more in attendance that morning, three times the usual number for the daybreak blessing. Becca had had to wait in line to light her candles. Everyone was scared. You could almost smell it in the streets. Everyone had been scared for months now, of course, but they'd got used to it and got on with living through it. But, over the last two nights, the fear had intensified. From the west of the city, it was possible to see the fires in Ezraville. Thousands had died in the Leader bombings, and the raids were ongoing. How long before the bombs started falling on Theda as well? How long before the entire coast was on fire? How long? How long? How long did Enothis have left? The one shred of good news had come in the Hierarch's homily. It had been officially confirmed that the first elements of the retreating land armada had cleared the mountains and were returning to the coast. There were soldiers coming home. She lit her three votive candles, one for Gard, one for Ido, one for whoever. No, one for Viltry. Over the interior desert, 09:07. If I'd just retreated from the Trinity Hives, marched all the way back across the desert, not to mention those mountains, I reckon I wouldn't feel much like fighting any more after that.
You have a point, Jad, Viltry said to his bombardier over the internal comm.
Halo flight had just passed over a shelf of desert upland, across which a 10-kilometer-long convoy of Imperial armor and weapons carriers was slowly toiling. I mean, Jad went on, we're meant to be holding the arch-enemy off until the ground forces get home and regroup. Regroup? That's a laugh. They'll be fit for nothing.
Maybe, Viltry said lightly. Let's just get on with our job and hope appearances are deceiving.
Greta was leading a flight of six marauders. They were travelling low, skimming the dust seas, striving to remain under the Modar and Auspex cones of any land carriers hidden in the wastes. Meanwhile, recon lightnings were flying somewhere above at their maximum operational ceiling, scoping for the elusive carriers. At any moment, Halo could be called in. The desert formed an eerie, almost grey landscape below them. The shadows of the low-flying machines flickered and danced over the hard-lipped dunes and the breaks of rock and scree. Viltry felt remarkably composed. He wondered to himself if Becca Mayer might have anything to do with his improved demeanour.
Contact, Lacombe suddenly said.
Viltry stiffened slightly.
It marks at 7,000, bearing 075.
Viltry looked at the scope. Enemy machines, definitely, heading southwest, 12 or more kilometers away. Not a patrol sweep. Their course was too true, too determined.
Lacombe, get on the Vox and see if operations can give us a backplot for them.
Over the engine roar, Viltry could hear his navigator talking on the main Vox. The internal cut back in again.
They had them on Modar about 15 minutes ago, turning south over the Machanite Ridge.
They're going home, Viltry said. They're going home, and they're in a hurry because they're right at the limit of their fuel. Halo flight, this is lead. Maintain level, but come about on my mark. Bearing 075.
The six laden machines banked around, still hugging the sand. Greta first, then Hello Hellstorm, Widowmaker, Throne of Terror, Consider Yourself Dead, and Miss Adventure. Viltry ordered all birds to go weapons live, arm payloads, and keep scanning. Even if they couldn't keep the bats in visual, they had to keep them on the scopes, because they were going to lead them straight to a carrier. Over Ezraville, 09:18.
Attacking!
Jagdeer sang out, and rolled Serial 02 into a screen dive, with Ramfrey, Walden, and Del Ruth at her heels. 4,000 meters below them, partly obscured by wispy thread clouds, the air was full of planes, darting and swooping like shoals of reef fish in a tropical sea. Another 9,000 meters below the huge air battle lay the vast, dark sprawl of Ezraville, a collage of blacks and greys beside the mirror-white expanse of the estuary mouth. Behind Jagdeer's pack, Larice Ash led the second half of Umbra in, Cordial, Van Tull, and Markwell. Only two-thirds of the squadron were airworthy. Clovin was gone, Esper out, probably forever, and both Blanchard and Zemek were grounded while their machines underwent repairs.
The power dive was ferocious. Negative G glued them to their seats and pulled their faces into rictus masks. Jagdeer's vision was spotty, but she tried to stay fixed, tried to make sense of the brawl they were coming in on. They'd been called up to meet a huge wave of enemy bombers heading for the coast. Nearly 200 machines, mainly Hell Talons and Tormentors, with fighter cover. Poor weather had delayed the Auspex plot, so the raiders were already closing on Ezraville before the warning had gone up. By now, they were shedding their payloads on the city. Other wings had already intercepted. Thunderbolts 26, 65 and 44, 138 Lightning, and a squadron of late-model Commonwealth Cyclones. With Umbra, that made about 60 Imperial machines committed. Others were inbound. More still, the majority were engaged against two other equally massive raid forces over the leader. The enemy bombers, hooked, brightly coloured and menacing, were ranged out in long, straggling Vs, like migrating waterfowl, holding pattern while they let their payloads go. The Imperials were milling around those ranks, trying to pick them off, whilst fending off the fierce scatter of locusts that were flying escort. As soon as their bombs were gone, the big Tormentors tended to pull out and head for home, but the Hell Talons, vastly powerful fighter bombers, stayed on station. Freed from the weight of their primary loads, they began peeling down to execute rocket or cannon attacks on the city, or even pulled up to provide additional top cover for the rest of the raid. The air was full of swarming machines, flickering fire and puffs of smoke. Sections of the city below were ablaze. Jagdeer felt the hate fan in her heart. Her dive was bringing her right down on a talon. She tracked the nose, keeping it in her sights, right at the center of her reticule, and squeezed her thumb. The talon detonated in midair with huge force. Jagdeer had already swept down past it at Mach 1, banking round under the raid formation and coming up on a tormentor from below. Her twin las pumped, and the machine trembled as its belly opened like a gutted fish, spilling out tatters of debris, machine parts and lubricants in fine sprays. Trailing white smoke, it began to tilt and founder. It was dead, but she stayed on it, switching to the quad cannons and raking it end to end. The Tormentor combusted and vaporized. Burning debris showered down towards the benighted city, but better for it to blow up in the air than come down on a hab block with a full payload. Tight on her heels in the dive, Ranfrey and Walden both destroyed Tormentors with fine intercepts and wheeled off, hunting. In less than 30 seconds, Walden had lined up on a talon that was in the process of unloading its bombs and shredded its cockpit section with quad fire. As the crimson machine spiraled away, coming apart, Walden whooped. He just made his fourth and fifth confirmed career kills. He was now an ace. Del Ruth, rearmost of the four, overshot her chosen target, which saw her coming down on it at the last moment and rolled a desperate evade. But she leveled out and immediately picked up a locust chasing one of the Commonwealth planes. Tone locked, she stung it hard, and as it began to judder, stung it again and blew it to fragments. Ash's four came in moments later, moving, if anything, at an even higher rate. Ash got a talon squarely and cleanly. Van Tull took a shot at a Tormentor, damaged it, looped around, and finished the kill. Cordial, his timing just out, mishit a talon, and then found he had a talon and a locust on him. He tried to jink out, but nearly collided with the lightning coming head-on. He screwed over to evade, almost stalling. The lightning banked hard, and its port wingtip clipped the talon behind Cordial. The lightning lost stability and began to spin, corrected, and then was blown apart by two other locusts. Trailing debris, the talon it had clipped came wide, right into Ash's gun cone. She showed it little mercy. Cordial swung about and started to chase down a Tormentor. It had shed its load and was turning for the home run, but it was still a viable target. If it died here, it couldn't come back with another clutch of bombs. Markwell, the last in, was sure he had a kill. He fired two bursts, but the Hell Talon was still intact as he rocketed down past it. He tucked in and began to climb again, bleeding off some power so his controls weren't quite so stiff with speed. In a flash, he realized he'd gone up between two Tormentors, both spilling out bombs like egg cases. He cursed his own luck. His haste to correct had made him miss a chance on two easy targets. Markwell was almost insensible with rage. He was seething with desire to make a kill, to open his account. Bad enough he was the youngest, the most inexperienced. Bad enough that Perz Esper had been maimed wet-nursing him. Markwell had no score, no kills to his name.
Now his confidence had returned after that disastrous virgin sortie. He was determined to prove his worth in combat. Hell, the sky was crawling with enemy machines. Surely he could hit one of them.
Umbra 8! Umbra 8! Break left now!
That was Van Tull's voice. Markwell didn't question it. He stomped the rudder bar and leaned on the stick, inverting as he pulled out to port. A flame-yellow Hell Talon rushed over and by him.
Thanks, Three,
he voxed, coming true, and climbing again.
You okay, Eight?
Van Tull voxed.
4A,
replied Markwell. They were still babysitting him. That rankled. Then again, but for Van Tull's warning, he'd like as not be dead now. He turned in. Almost immediately, he picked up a cyclone, running for its life from a Talon. The Commonwealth prop plane was weeping smoke. Markwell wondered why operations kept the cyclones and wolf cubs in the air. It was suicide, flying machines like that against the enemy's vector-thrust predators. He cranked the throttle, banked wide, clipped off a wasted but satisfying burst at a Tormentor as he went long over its back and lined up on the Talon. This time.
The port engine was dead, and so was Artone. Franz Skalter fought with the cyclone's leaden stick and called plaintively to his co-pilot and longtime friend. Hard rounds had torn through the machine's cockpit, shattering the glass nose and ripping Artone's torso in half. Wind screamed in through the shattered bubble. There was blood everywhere, and the instruments were plastered with sticky flecks of human tissue.
"I'll get you home! I'll get you home!"
Skalter wailed, denying the scene around him, and imagining some miraculous future where he brought the ruptured cyclone down, and the crews rushed in, and Artone was patched up and made alive again. Skalter knew he had to keep evading. The Hell Talon was right on his tail now.
"Seeker One! Seeker One! Someone, please!"
The Talon's guns lit up. Like a feline playing with a mouse, the bastard wasn't going to let the cyclone go. It swung from side to side with muscular power, correcting for every frantic jink and twist the Commonwealth pilot tried to make. It had got the blood scent. It wanted the kill. It was greedy. It was staying on the target. The first and oldest mistake. Markwell came around on its five, calculating the deflection angle with almost leisurely brio. Then he opened up with his quad cannons, feeling the heavy slap of them retard his motion, hearing the breech blocks bang and the autoloaders rattle to feed ammo from the whirring drums. Somehow, Markwell had expected the enemy machine to explode or catch fire or do something equally spectacular. It simply quivered. Part of one blade wing deformed like foil, and a gulp of brown smoke belched out of its engines. Then it fell out of the air. All lift lost in one shocking instant, it dropped away, turning end over end, like a toy that had been thrown aside by a petulant child. It spun away below him, smaller, smaller.
Thrown. He'd got it. He'd killed it stone dead.
Seeker One! Seeker One!
He stammered, rousing from a brief fugue.
This is Umbra 8! You're clear, friend! Clear! Get your machine home and down!
Umbra 8, this is Seeker One. Understood?
Not even a thank you.
Markwell didn't care. He had a fire in his belly, a coal of excitement and satisfaction. He was no longer the kid who needed babysitting. Something threw him into the seat like a kick in the face. The smear inverted, every alarm screaming. In terror, mystified, Markwell dragged on the stick, but it was slack and dead. He saw flame on his port side, sections of metal plating slipping off like fish scales. Fire licked into the cockpit.
No, he yelled. Oh, no, no, no.
He fumbled with his harness, trying to reach the eject handle. Half-heard voices blasted out of the vox. Huge negative G. He was already greying out. He couldn't lift his hand, let alone reach the lever. In front of him, like a rapidly spinning kaleidoscope image, the city was rushing up. Over the interior desert, 0922. They kissed over the top of a dune headland, and there it was. The size of it took their breath away. Judd voiced a particularly florid oath. A mass carrier. It was almost a kilometer long, a huge slab of burnished decking and raised ramps, bronze in the desert light. Vast wheel assemblies rolled it across the dust. Viltry had been told the enemy called these behemoths Eyries, as if they were home roosts for the murderous bats. It was a feat of mechanical genius, a juggernaut, a giant amongst machines. Nothing could kill something that big. Nothing could... He caught himself. They would have to try. That was the job the God Emperor had decreed for them.
No hesitation, Halo, he cried. We're committed. Line up and shed. Then come around with wing loads for the second pass. The Emperor protects.
He could see the talons they had been following sweeping into the fluted arrestor runs on the carrier's top side. They looked tiny by comparison, little gaudy specks. The carrier had seen the inbound marauders coming down onto it at zero height. Hundreds of anti-aircraft batteries tracked round, alert, like the alarmed tails of scorpions, and the air was filled with bursting flak and zipping traces. A hailstorm of fire.
Stay on it! Stay on it! Viltry ordered.
A siren screeched. Amongst the blizzard of flak bursts, Viltry glimpsed the trail smoke of missiles banging off from the carrier. Wordlessly, he hit the chaff switch, and clouds of glittering, distorting material puffed out of Greta's launchers. Then heat flares, too. Near-miss explosions shook the airframe. The space between the onrushing planes and the vast carrier was muddy with flash flowers and blooms of black-and-white smoke. A rocket struck Miss Adventure and killed her, dead. The torn wreckage and hull sections, moving at close to Mach 1, cartwheeled over the desert floor, raking the sand, spitting flame like a firework.
Nose on top! Anytime you like, Viltry said.
The turrets opened up, playing fire along the carrier's starboard hull. Viltry, concentrating as hard as he could, saw bats trying to launch from the lower chutes. Naxol had seen them too. A locust came off its ion catapult and burst like a flare. 10 seconds. 5. Flak damage to the port wing. Ignore it. Hold her true. 2 seconds. 1. Release. Halo pulled off over the giant carrier. Every single bombardier had placed his drop perfectly. Vast eruptions lit up the deck, puncturing the armored ramps, blasting flak mounts out of their sockets, toppling lifter assemblies and crane gantries. Someone, Viltry's guess was Widowmaker, dropped their clutch into the command spire that rose over the top deck section. A massive fireball spread out, felling the spire in ragged chunks. 4 marauders pulled clear of the blazing carrier. Throne of Terror, bombs gone, had been hit by flak. In his rear picture, Viltry saw it flip onto its back and crash into the sands. The 4 remaining planes arced round in formation, turning high, and began their second pass. Monumental palls of smoke rose from the stricken carrier. They came in with rockets now, turrets blasting again. The wing loads loosed and snaked off on spiraling trails of smoke. There was nothing like the same weight of flak on them now. The rockets splashed, sheeting fire and hull fragments into the desert sky as the marauders went over. They began to pull away, climbing. Something primal and catastrophic happened to the carrier. Most likely, one of the rockets had penetrated the magazine or the drive section. The carrier spasmed, shook, and then incinerated in one stupendously bright flash. The shockwave almost knocked Halo out of the air. They soared out, stabilizing. A giant cloud of smoke, shaped like a forest mushroom, filled the sky behind them. Theta MAB South, 09:30. The operations rotunda was frantic with activity and chatter. Between them, the flight controllers were overseeing 4 major air fights and 9 intercept sorties.
Darrow!
Darrow was staring up at the roof dome, where sunlight was spilling in through the collar of stained glass.
Darrow! Junior!
Eads sounded tetchy. Darrow started.
Sir, I'm sorry. My mind was drifting. No excuses. What were you saying, flight?
Eads turned his face towards the young man. There was sympathy in its sightless look. Eads held out a scrap of printout wafer.
I thought you might like to announce this, son, he said. Proof that not just bad things happen in this life.
Flight?
They told me about Heckle, son. I'm sorry that had to be you who found him. Think about something else now. Announce that.
Darrow looked down at the flimsy printout, then smiled. He looked up and cleared his throat. He'd heard junior flight controllers and assistants make proud announcements like this. Now it was his turn. And it beat them all.
Attention! Attention! Halo flight confirms it has destroyed a mass carrier in the North Desert. That is confirmed. Enemy carrier destroyed!
Darrow's smile widened as the rotunda broke out in cheers and applause. The first carrier found and killed. Even Banzi was clapping and grinning. Eads said something. Darrow leaned forward to hear him over the tide of applause.
Say again, flight.
I said, Eads whispered, we might just do this.
We might just win this against the odds.
Palace Pier, 1402. It was a grey, flat afternoon, and no one was in. Hardly a surprise, as the smoke wash from Ezraville had been fuming down the straits since daybreak. The cafe door opened. Becca looked up from the slates she was reading at the counter and saw Viltry in the doorway. 30 empty tables stood between them. A Thracian waltz idled in the background. He smiled and took off his cap.
Hello. You look pleased with yourself, she said, rising.
He walked between the vacant tables to reach her and slid a haversack off his shoulder.
A big success today. A really big one. My crews are away celebrating, madly. They will be draining the vats of Theda dry tonight. And woe betide any ladies of easy virtue.
Have you been drinking? Becca asked.
A little, maybe. In dispersal. I do apologize.
Why are you here, Viltry?
It sounds to me like you're missing parties and celebrations and...
Viltry opened his haversack. He pulled out two paper-wrapped haunches of veer, a bag of sweet tubers, bunches of fresh greens, dessert biscuits, and a bottle of Sajira Red. Becca's eyes widened. Her mouth watered. She'd never seen the like, not even before rationing.
I was given these, sort of a tribute. Ornoff sent a hamper down to reward the unit. The men had away with most of the drink, obviously, but I kept the rest. I thought you might know what to do with it. I mean, food-wise, as a cook.
He looked at her. His eyes were wide and honest. He added,
And I couldn't think of anyone else I'd rather share it with.
Really?
Yeah. Is that all right?
Yes, she said.
I think it is.